Hello, everybody, and welcome to our RSPT call. This is our first official call to start you off in this program, and I'm very excited to have you here. I think this is a life-changing program, both for you and for the people that you are serving. It's an epidemic, as we all know, that insulin resistance is rampant in our society. Most people don't know they have it because of the failure of medicine to recognize early signals and the failure of medicine to test early. And the fact that most people are not taught to get their own glucose meter and check their own glucose and check to see how their body responds to it unless they're already diabetic. And as we know, we don't want to wait till people become diabetic before we offer them solutions, because by then, much of the damage is done. By then, some of it can even be reversible. By then, they've been living with imbalance and a lot of symptoms that could have been healed. And by then, a lot of times, the blood vessels are already starting to thicken, the walls are starting to thicken, they're becoming inelastic, and we've set the stage for cardiovascular disease and heart disease, strokes and blood pressure problems. So all of those things, and cancer and Alzheimer's. So, and the list goes on, right? And you guys are here because you recognize this. You guys are here because you realize that there is a failure in the medical system about this, or that maybe you are in the medical system and you're going, oh my God, we never learned this, and I want to be able to help people before they get really sick. Or you're a health coach and you were taught really good stuff about how to be a coach and how to guide people through making the changes, and but you never really got deep into the science to understand it so that you can offer really proactive approaches to the problem. So I'm excited that you're here. I'm super excited that you're here. And if you haven't already jumped in, hopefully by now you have, because it's been over a month since we officially started. Jumped in and gotten started, I highly recommend you just jump in with the first module and go through it. And just watch the videos, read the transcripts, because the more times you hear and see things, the more it sinks in. And then take the MP3 recording, download it to your portable device, and listen to it when you're at appointments, when you're watching your kids play soccer, when you're driving, when you're running or exercising and working out at the gym. This is going to give you exposure to the information. Some of it is probably not new to you. I mean, you've been hanging around and you did some of my early trainings and I taught a lot, but it goes into so much depth that you probably haven't gone into before. It's important for you to understand what's going on in the system, the mechanism by which sugar gets into the bloodstream and the body responds and all the different parts of the body that respond. So I recommend you jump in and get started there. And at this beginning point, identify a patient, a client, a loved one, a friend who you think might be in this situation where they don't have a diagnosis, but you suspect that there's some blood sugar imbalance going on. And go through it as you're going through the modules. Take this person through along with you. Study the module, get really good at it, do some assessments, and then start to work with this person. I think you're going to get some tremendous, tremendous value by doing this. If you don't have somebody that you can identify in your life that's willing to do that, reach out on the Facebook group and say, hey, anybody want to be a buddy with me? And I'll guide you through. You guide me through. Practice with each other. The way they call it practice, right? Medical practice, a nurse practitioner practice. Call it a practice for a reason. We're constantly practicing. We're constantly taking the skills that we know, that we learn from books, that we learn from each other, and applying it to each person that comes in. And because each person is unique, because each person has their own set of genes and past experiences and eating and trauma and dental work and all these things that play in, exposures, each person is going to require a slightly different approach. And we do this in groups. We, as you know, we teach this in a group program, and hundreds of people at a time. And you may wonder, how do we personalize that? What we do is we teach the clients to personalize it. We teach them the various things that could go wrong or could be happening and teach them to respond. So no two people in the Sweet Spot program are eating the same exact diet or testing at the exact same intervals or doing the same exercise program. We're adapting it to each person's uniqueness. And I want you to keep that in mind, that everybody's a little bit unique. Now, here's the thing. With any kind of healthcare, you do a test and you look in the book, and the particular set of circumstances in your test may not match the book. Each person's unique. And it's when you understand what this stuff means that you can put it all together. And that's why we have these calls. We have these calls so that you can start working with this with yourself or your clients or your family members, friends, etc. And then get labs done or get the records, you know, the diet and the blood sugar records, and then bring them to these calls and let's work on them together. Let's all learn from each other's cases, right? So I'm really excited to be supporting you on these calls for these months in, I think it's August, September, October, July, August, September. I am losing track of time. So for 3 months, there's an overlap. No, I think this is our first official. We have an overlap of two calls. One is our general office hours that we have every month ongoing, and then the other is specific for this program. So you have twice a month opportunities to ask questions about the program, ask questions about particular cases, ask me what this is, what's going on with this person, what tests would you recommend, what strategies would you recommend, this is what I've done with this person so far, what do you think the next steps are. Use the fact that you have these calls to get at, you know, my knowledge base. I've been doing this for almost 30 years, and I've got a few tricks under my belt, and I can usually help you get to the heart, or at least get you pointed in the direction of what other investigation you want to be doing. Because, right, this is detective work. We're constantly seeking to understand. We're not applying formulas. We're not listening to somebody and say, oh, you have this diagnosis, therefore you take this drug or do this surgery or take this supplement even. It doesn't work like that. It doesn't work like that at all. So that's why I'm excited to have you here. So make the good use of these calls. They're not intended to teach, because the website is loaded with information to show you exactly, you know, what's going on in the various things. There's 9 modules of content. I think the last one is got some marketing and business type skills where you can take what you've learned and learn how to package it into a program. And the other thing is, some of you got I think it was the first 5 of you or whatever, got a call with me, and I already did one, and I found out that one person set a record. We're going to have to get an award for her. She went through the entire program on a 2-day weekend where she had like a whole bunch of free time. And that's not normal. That's not average. Don't feel like you're comparing. Some people take 6 months to do it. Some people take 3. Some people take 6 weeks. Some people take a year. My goal for you is to learn it. She also had some background before where she had been working with people with insulin resistance in the past. So she had a head start. But that's the thing. There's enough information. You know, there's not so much information that you couldn't if you sat down for 2 straight days finish it, but I don't recommend it, right? You want to absorb it, use it, think about people to apply it to, and find people that will work with you. And if you are, if you don't have anybody in your own fold and you want to reach out on the Sweet Spot page and just say, look, I am in the IRSPT program. I am not certified yet, but I would love to support you if you need support or would like that support. You're welcome to do that. If somebody says yes, make sure you let us know so that we can, you know, keep a monitor on that. But also, you would get credit if you write it up towards your certification. Let me say a few words about the certification. A certification is recognized by the, what is it called? NANP, National Association of Nutrition Professionals, by the American Association of Drugless Practitioners, and we're applying for some others. when you get the certification, what that gives you is the ability to be become part of our team if you want to. Actually get hired on first as an intern where you're following somebody else around, and then as a paid professional to work with people in our programs if we need coaches. And we will pick, you know, who we see as the best of the best, you know, the ones that are coming to calls that I really get to know, that I really feel comfortable with your skill set. So that's where we are. So it pays to get the certification. Plus, you get to put a nice little thing on your website. And we go, oh, you're certified in insulin resistance. Well, my mom has type 2 diabetes. Can you work with her? I have heard of that. And whatever. And you can do that. Yeah. And when we get our website up, which is going to be probably by October, our INE website, we've been working on it for a while, we're going to have a find a practitioner page. So once you've passed certain criteria, you can get yourself listed there. All right. So what I'd like to do is see what's going on. I like to talk to people. I'm an old-fashioned type of gal here. I like to actually talk to people. Yeah, it's fine. I can answer questions in the chat or the Q&A, and I'll go look there right away. But think about some questions you want to formulate. Or if you don't have questions, just open up the line. If you're new to IRSPT, open up the line and introduce yourself and let us know who you are, where you're from, what kind of practitioner you are, and what you want to get out of this program. So I'm going to go see. First thing I'm going to do is go into the Q&A, and I'm going to see who's putting questions ahead of time. Yeah, we have some people that put them up like days ago. Good. So I'm going to go through those first. So just so you know, when we do these calls, I like to go through the questions and answers that have been submitted in advance first. So that way, if you do that, you can just come to the recording and listen at the beginning. Not that I recommend that. I recommend you listen all the way through, but it's easier to find your answer when you do it that way. So I'll start there. And then for chat, it looks like there's a lot of good conversation going on the chat. Yes. And if you stop hearing me, if you're on the phone, press *7. Press *7 if you're on the phone. And let me just put this on. All guests party. All guests can talk. No host required. All guests are muted. Okay, I'm going to put it on that. So if you, for some reason, this has happened last week, suddenly I just stopped and I had to call back in. So if you stop hearing me, press *7 and just say out loud, hey, I don't hear you anymore. All right? Because it was just one way last week when it happened. Nobody was hearing me. All right. So I'm going to go and look at the Q&A first. And okay. Carol wants to know clarification regarding the process of gluconeogenesis. I understand it can occur from influences of the pancreas on or from the adrenals. In the pancreas, I understand glucagon formed from non-carbo sources of amino acid and lactate are broken down into glucose. Oh, no. No. Okay, I'm a little confused regarding gluconeogenesis pathway. Regarding the cortisol from the adrenals, is the cortisol breakdown protein stored as glycogen in the muscle tissue? Okay, so I'm going to just start from scratch because there's a little bit of a confusion here. So we've got the pancreas. The pancreas produces insulin, which helps to lower blood sugar, and glucagon, which raises it. You you put the two words together. You put glucagen, which is like the combination of glucagon and glycogen. So glucagon is a hormone produced in the pancreas. It's the opposite role of insulin. So if the blood sugar starts to dip too low, the pancreas detects it and brings up, secretes the glucagon, and the glucagon then goes into the liver, and that's where gluconeogenesis starts. Glucagon stimulates gluconeogenesis. So the glucagon stimulates the liver to find stored glycogen and then create it back into sugar. So glycogen is produced from storing excess sugar in the blood and storing it as basically as it's almost like starch. Glycogen is like a starchy. It's a lot of sugar put together. Breaks it down, puts it into the bloodstream. The sugar levels go up and then the glucagon levels come down. Usually it's not going up enough that it stimulates an overabundance of insulin unless there's a problem and we over break down that glycogen, and then we could cause the sugar to go up too high, and then insulin comes in and tries to bring it down, and you could end up with this, you know, roller coaster ride. Okay, so that's what gluconeogenesis is. Generally, gluconeogenesis is a breakdown of glycogen to form new glucose. And in general, now this is not 100%, but in general, adrenaline, okay, norepinephrine, epinephrine is adrenaline. So adrenaline will stimulate lipolysis. Some people say lipolysis, lipolysis or lipolysis, the breakdown of fat, because it's quick and it gives you quick energy. So that's in general. It's not to say that adrenaline doesn't also stimulate gluconeogenesis or the breakdown, which I'm going to say with cortisol mostly does. So they're all kind of gluconeogenesis, but there's different ways that it works, except lipolysis doesn't break it down into glucose. So in general, the cortisol favors the breakdown of protein to be broken down and to take the branched chain amino acids that are stored in that protein and turn them into glucose. There's only three amino acids that can be stored and can be converted into glucose: leucine, isoleucine, and glycine. Okay, those are the three. They're called branch chain amino acids. They can get converted to glucose. For whatever reason, cortisol preferences protein. So cortisol causes the breakdown of protein into glucose, which isn't so good when we're thinking about trying to build muscle, right? But if we run out of glycogen, because the liver can only store, I think it's around 1,800 calories, give or take, as glycogen. The muscles can store a little bit more, so the muscles have glycogen in them. But once that's used up, then the cortisol, the breakdown generally comes from the muscle, unless you convert into ketosis, where the body becomes adept at breaking the fat down into fuel and utilizing fat as fuel. I think that's basically it. So I'm going to just routine. Does the cortisol break down muscle stored as glycogen? No, it just protein is not stored as glycogen. So the confusion is that cortisol breaks down protein into branched chain amino acids. Yeah. Also in it is only in the liver that the lactate is broken down into glucose, cortisol not affecting a breakdown of lactate. Yeah. Yes, I think so. Okay. Hopefully that helps, Carol. And anybody else that might have been confused. And if you're still thinking you need some more clarification on that, please come up. Carol says in the introduction module, the section, the overview transcript says, it says on page 18 of 23, as a result of insulin resistance, you're going to have excess belly fat. Yes, you have increased lean muscle mass and damage to the vessel linings. I don't understand why insulin resistance wouldn't result in a decrease of muscle mass. Yes, it must be a misspeak that wasn't caught in the transcript. And I'm going to jot that down, and I'll take a look at it. Sometimes there's a misspeak. If I'm speaking and I say one word, I catch it, but it may not have been caught. Let me see. So thank you. If that's an error, I'm going to get that corrected. Let me just type this up, write it down. You're very astute, Carol. Thank you very much. Okay, I'm going to find an IRSPT. Okay, so I'm going to do this. IRSPT call notes. Okay. All right. And then I'm going to look at. Okay. So this is overview. And thank you for providing the page number. That's helpful. 18 of 23. Take a look at that, increased versus decreased. And we usually have people go through these and read them before we put them up and catch errors like that, but, you know, it's easy to miss. Okay. Who's next? That was Carol. Gail. Hi, Gail from Myrtle Beach. Two questions that came up with studying. I appreciate clarification. One, if high triglycerides are an issue for a client, despite positive dietary changes already made, should one look at pancreas function in addition to genetics, since the pancreas controls blood levels of triglycerides? If so, what foods foster pancreatic health? Okay, so this is a case where this is a hypothetical, and I think I need to see specifically. So, for example, if somebody has high triglycerides, it can be any number of things. Generally speaking, it's going to be usually caused by excess calories, number one, or excess sugars, excess starches, excess things that convert to sugars. When somebody says to me, despite positive dietary changes, I want to see what that is. I want to see exactly what the person's eating. I want to see the numbers, right? So, yeah, genetics play a part. There's no specific foods that foster pancreatic health other than, right, just lots and lots of green leafy vegetables, good fats, not oils, staying away from oils, eating good plant-based fats, and, you know, nutrient-dense diet, and keeping the glycemic levels low so that the person isn't having an issue. Also, if the person is eating a lot of cooked foods, processed foods that required, and it may be past, that required the pancreas to produce a lot, we would want to see what that is. There is a test you can do in the stool that tests for the function of the pancreas in terms of pancreatic elastase, if you're looking at pancreas. But there's a lot of other reasons for triglycerides being out of balance. It could be a fatty acid imbalance. It could be an excess of omega-6 over omega-3. So that's a good thing to be looking at as well. For current fad low-carb, no-carb diets, extreme fitness diets, or keto diets done incorrectly, those that exclude complex carbs, lead to glycogen deficiency. Sure. I mean, glycogen is stored when there's an excess of sugar that gets converted. So if somebody's eating a very low-carb diet, they're not going to have a lot of glycogen, although it doesn't take much to produce glycogen. So, yeah, but that's very easy, especially if you're doing a lot of intermittent fasting. It depletes the glycogen stores. A rise in muscle atrophy and hypoglycemia. I don't think that, I don't see that a low-carb diet or extreme fitness diet is going to lead to muscle atrophy unless there's either insufficient protein intake, poor pancreatic function or poor stomach acid function to basically digest the protein and absorb the protein. Just wondering how to explain how this might be playing into such a health issue. I'm not sure if this is the same person you're talking about, though, Gail, if this is the same person that has the high triglycerides. So again, if you want to bring these cases in, just absolutely bring them in, but I want more specific information. And anything given to the extreme can be problems. Yes, anything taken to the extreme can be a problem. So if somebody eats an extreme low carb diet and exercises to the max and doesn't take in the right amount of protein, sure, they can have a problem with this. Absolutely. So I'd love to see some numbers. Chris, 4 seconds before jumping in, Carol H. question. I understand the liver sends glucose to the muscles when blood sugar goes down for any reason, as well as during acute or even prolonged stress. Is that accurate? The liver sends glucose. I think it's more in times of stress, the cortisol stimulates gluconeogenesis. It will stimulate the breakdown of protein that is in the blood or breakdown of muscle tissue. And then the muscles will, you know, it's not necessarily when blood sugar goes down for any reason. Because if a person is shifted into ketosis and can burn ketones, we don't send glucose to the muscles, right? We don't need to send glucose to the muscles because the muscles can burn ketones. So I think there might be a little, maybe I'm not catching the gist of the question, but the liver stores glycogen. The glycogen can be broken down as glucose, which goes into the bloodstream. It's not sent to the muscles. It's just put into the bloodstream. And then whatever tissue needs it, needs the energy. It could be the heart muscle. It could be the lungs. It could be the muscles. It could be anything at all that needs that glucose will use it. Okay. And in the absence of being able to burn ketones for fuel, we rely on glucose. So if we're not getting into a ketogenic state, we can definitely break down muscle tissue, liver glycogen, and muscle glycogen. Okay, 1 minute, 53 seconds after event. Okay, so this is I've got two more questions and then I'll move on to see if anybody has their hands raised. So Nanette says, does choosing not to eat until noon or later for years cause a problem for the adrenals? Would it be considered stressing? Some people would call it intermittent fasting, except this is being done for years. Weight is gained versus when three meals a day are eaten. It depends. You know, it really does depend on the people. I know people can go on for years, and it's not a stress to their body to just do two meals a day. For people who are already in a state of adrenal fatigue, it's probably not a great idea to skip breakfast because the body is producing, the body is needing that, and it is going into a state of stress even further because of the glucose being down. But once the body gets into a homeostasis with it, for many people, not necessarily for everybody, it's not a problem. So a lot of people do it for years. I've been doing it for a couple of years, probably. Weight gained versus three meals a day. I mean, that varies from person to person. So many people say that when they do two meals a day, they do better because they're spacing it. And it's all very unique. You've got to really look at each individual person and see what's going on for them. I think I missed. Yeah, no, I got it. And Chris, one more question. I'd like to know if PCOS is only caused by insulin resistance and genetics, or is there another metabolic issue that would cause it? Okay, first of all, genetics doesn't cause it. It predisposes to it, makes you more likely to get it if the lifestyle factors are there. PCOS occurs when there's excess androgens compared to estrogen progesterone. I also see it with estrogen dominance over progesterone, so low progesterone levels compared to the other hormones. Cause-wise, you know, insulin resistance is the most common cause that I know, but I'm sure there are other causes. Other triggers, other lifestyle triggers that can cause it to happen. But I want us to really get into the way of saying genetics doesn't cause disease. Genetics predisposes someone. It's the lifestyle factors that cause it. Now, there are a few exceptions to that. I think cystic fibrosis has been found to be very specifically a genetic disease. If you have it, you have that disease. You have the gene. But most other things, if you have the gene, doesn't mean you have the disease. So I want us to be really clear. The genetics predisposes, and insulin resistance issues, you know, hormonal imbalances create PCOS, and insulin resistance is one of the key causes of it. All right. So who is here? Kiki. Hello, Kiki.
Hi, how are you? Always so good to hear you.
Oh, thank you. Yes, how are you?
Good, thank you. So firstly, I would like to just share two things that I've learned from starting to work with a few people. Number one is, like, most of us here in this space are, like, fairly health conscious. We've been on this journey for a while. There's a reason why we're here. And most people that I start working with are so distance from eating healthy and healthy lifestyle habits that, like, things that we would never consider eating is considered by them like a healthier upgrade already. So it's just like I really had to, like, be creative, and I had to give these people a lot of, like, documentaries to watch in their free time and books to read just to try to reinforce what I teach them in that one short session. Just to help reinforce, because we're in total different stratospheres, and it's hard, very hard because things that for me is like such a given, and so it's like they're like on a different planet. So that's
right.
One thing.
Mainstream. Like that's the typical, you know, you can preach to the choir, right? And those are the fun patients to get.
Yeah.
It's the people that are already there, but the reality is most of the people we need to reach are the ones that you're describing, and we need to wake them up, and it's a great idea to give them things to read and things to watch, and that's why I've created all my programs to be able to really vet what I'm giving them, so that I'm giving them the information that I know they need. And it's very true.
And another thing that I've learned is that people are really not so keen to prick themselves, and it's challenging, and I had to also be a bit creative about this, because as much as I would love them to test themselves more frequently, and they really don't want to, so you just, okay, you know what, test by 30 minutes, do me 30 minutes and do 45, then, you know, just hard when they don't want to test themselves so frequent.
Well, at least you got them to test themselves at all, right?
Yeah.
Because that gives them proof. It gives them that proof that there is something going on. Whereas you can say to them, okay, just write down everything you eat and then track how you feel, your mood, your energy, etc. But that's not proof positive to them that it's a blood sugar issue. It does give them feedback about how what they're eating is affecting them. But there's just nothing like eating your favorite healthy, quote unquote, meal and finding that it keeps your blood sugar to one.
Yeah, definitely. Like I had someone who once, she said after measuring every slice of pizza, she was like, I'm never going to touch pizza again. She was like so shocked how high her numbers were. So definitely,
Yeah, you're definitely doing a good job there because.
Yeah.
It's something that, you know, sometimes people have been reading about this or reading about that. Yeah, I should get healthy. But when they see it, it freaks them out.
Yeah, 100%. So I had a few questions. So I have someone who, she had stomach surgery. I think she had the sleeve. So she has to constantly eat small meals. So I just wanted to hear your take on that because I know that you prefer if we get them to space their meals, as long as possible. What do we do in such a case?
Yeah, so did she have that, the bypass surgery?
Yeah.
People are different. It's a whole different world with this. So first of all, they're just never going to digest their food properly, and they have to be well nourished. Yeah, they have to eat small meals. Here's what happens. So they've cut off the stomach. Most of the stomach is not in use. There's this little teeny piece of the stomach that the food will go through, and then it completely bypasses the duodenum and goes down into the jejunum.
Is the sleeve considered bypass? The sleeve surgery, is that considered bypass?
Well, I'm not sure if the sleeve is the same as the bypass. So let me just see if I can, let me look that one up.
I think she had the sleeve. And I'm not sure what that is, if it just makes the stomach smaller or.
Oh, I'm looking, I like to look at pictures. Gastric sleeve surgery, let's see. Okay, let's see. I want to see some pictures. Give me a second. I'm going to just look because I like to see where they're cutting it off. I know what all right, let's see. I don't know how anybody could ever let themselves get this done. It's just so gross. So they're basically, there's a bypass where it goes right in. It misses the stomach and goes right into the jejunum. Trying to see. Oh, so they actually remove part of the stomach with the sleeve, and they give them a smaller stomach. Okay, so that's not as bad as the gastric bypass. It looks like they're just cutting off part of the stomach.
That's what I understood, that they make the stomach smaller.
Smaller, yeah. Yeah, so it's not as bad as the other. But, yeah, smaller meals, right, because they can't. The stomach isn't smaller. Well, that's the whole point, right? So I would say if the the reason she did it is to lose weight, then she should be eating small meals, but still only three times a day.
Mm-hmm. Because and you know, the funny thing is that she did this, she's 56 now, she did this surgery like years ago, I don't know, maybe 10 or 12 years ago, because she's so overweight and she finds she has no control over food. And the funny thing is that a few weeks into working with her, and she lost like 40 pounds, and she was like, she couldn't believe it, how she does have control over food, and she could control, like, with the right guidance and coaching. Like, she's fascinated. Wow. She totally overhauled her lifestyle.
That's awesome. Good job. Now, when she had the surgery, did she lose a bunch of weight and then gain it back?
She gained everything back, everything plus. And also she's on a lot of different medications today, which I believe that are hindering her weight loss because she's very overweight. And also she has massive sleep issues, which I feel is a bit above my scope of practice, because she has serious sleep issues. And maybe you have, I don't know, what do you do with people who have such serious sleep issues? Like they sleep in 2-3 hours and they're waking up at 3 a.m. and they're energized.
That's not why.
But the problem is that she's constantly falling asleep during the day. She's falling asleep. She can't drive because she falls asleep. But she just, her night's sleep is like very, very short.
Completely out of balance. So, okay. So with the meals, let's go back to the meals. That was your original question.
Okay.
Smaller meals, great. That's what she needs. And just still do them three times a day. Don't eat more frequently. Because that's what's keep creating the weight, is that constant load of insulin in her system. So the three meals a day. It sounds like she's already making some good changes. She lost 40 pounds.
Yeah.
Started working. 14. Yeah. Significant. So.
That was in like 4 weeks, you know?
That's great. And let her know, explain to her why you want to still to eat them more frequently. She'll get used to being hungry between meals. And if she should be getting hungry between meals, that the sign of hunger is stimulating fat loss. So I think it's a good thing. Yeah, we really have to teach people how to be comfortable with that hunger, because people that overeat, they don't want to, as soon as they feel at least a little bit of hunger, instead of even waiting for it to become a full-blown hunger, it's like, I got to get rid of this.
Yeah.
Right? But teaching her that. In terms of the sleep, we have a lot of good resources in the sleep module, and I would just go through sequentially with them. You know, is she watching TV at night? Is she using the computer at night? Does she dim the lights at night? How close is her meal to dip?
I went through all of these things with her. I did, and she doesn't have an issue falling asleep. She falls asleep right away, then and there. The problem is that no matter when she goes to sleep, she'll sleep for 3 hours and then get up. And another problem is that when she wakes up and it's like 4 a.m., she feels like hungry. She wants food at 4 a.m., 5 a.m. Now she's making a green smoothie, which is good, but I wish I could help her with the sleep and,
yes. So have you gone through everything in there? Have you, you got to look at her adrenals perhaps, because her cortisol may be going up. If she's hungry when she wakes up, that's probably a sign that she had a surge of cortisol, which caused the breakdown of sugar into the blood. And you know, when you get sugar into the blood, you want more, you get hungry. I mean, there's a lot of reasons for that. So I would say asking her about stress. And sometimes there's a real delicate.
Oh, yeah, stress is skyrocketing, very high stress. They're dealing with a lot of stress.
Yeah, so, you know, one of the things you can do is try some calming. Does she take any calming herbs at bedtime?
I taught her to do like chamomile tea, and I downloaded for her a few apps, like a meditation app and like a tapping app, which helped her immensely.
Great.
Definitely helps, but yeah, she's still getting up. I feel like maybe she needs professional help. I don't know.
No, maybe not. Maybe you just haven't done, you know, she hasn't exhausted all of it. So it sounds like you got great results, somewhat results with the stress apps. There are a couple of things you can have her do. One, there's this thing called brain time that may help. with her brain. We've had a few people, other practitioners in here who actually had been having problems with sleep and downloaded this app thing. Well, it's not a download. You do it right online. It's called Brain Time, drritamarie.com/braintime. See if that helps her. If it does and it's something you want to recommend to others, you can actually sign up as an affiliate for them and refer it to people and get, you know, get a commission or be able to give them a discount, whatever. Okay. So I would look at that. I would look at if she's under a lot of stress. There's an herb called magnolia bark that can help bring down the cortisol at bedtime. Because what's happening is...
Where do I get that? At a health food store?
Yeah, you can actually get it. I just ordered some powdered magnolia bark on Amazon. She could add it to a smoothie. Like she could have it like she probably just have it at bedtime. And then if she wakes up in the night, have it again. It helps to help calm down those cycles.
Can she take this if she's on different medications or she needs to check with her doctor?
You'd have to look it up and I don't know what it, you know, if it interferes with any of her medications.
Mm-hmm.
You'd have to look that up.
Okay.
I don't think so, but it depends. What is she on medications for?
For lowering blood pressure, metformin. She actually had to lower her metformin and her blood pressure medication because she was so dizzy one day. Right. She ran to her doctor and happens to be, she thought she was like, forget it, it's healthy eating, it's detox, it's getting dizzy, it's not for me. Happens to be she had to lower her medication.
She's on the right track.
And an antidepressant.
Okay, yeah, I don't see that all of these, the magnolia could actually help her need less of all of those. So you do want her that this herb can actually lower your blood pressure even more. It can help you lower your blood sugar even more. So just keep watching.
Okay, amazing. I'm excited. I've never heard this one before. Okay.
Yeah.
I'm going to look it up.
Yep. I found it on Amazon, a little bag. I posted it on the Sweet Spot site a couple of days ago. I posted it, a link to it.
I'll scroll through. Okay.
Okay. And I posted a link to an article that had like 16 different mechanisms by which magnolia flower magnolia bark helps.
Yeah. Okay, wonderful. And one more question.
I was going to say, make sure that she's doing, that she's getting out and having sun into her eyes before.
Trying,
yeah.
Yeah. We're trying. She's really following very well. I have to, like, amazing results. So,
That's awesome.
Yeah. One more question in reference to a different guy that I'm working with. He sleeps a lot. He sleeps, no matter how much he sleeps, he always feels tired. Even after sleeping for 14 hours, he wakes up, he still feels tired. That's the opposite to her. What could be going on here?
Adrenals. It's probably related to his adrenals. I would be looking at doing like either a Dutch test or a salivary adrenal test.
Mm-hmm.
And asking lots of questions about, you know, past trauma and the stress levels.
Also dealing with a lot of stress. I mean, have you met anybody today who isn't dealing with so much stress?
Everybody has stress.
So much stress. Yeah.
It's teaching people coping mechanisms because we can't change what's out there. We can only change how we respond to
it. Okay.
All right.
Okay, very good. Thank you so much. I appreciate
it. You're welcome. Bye-bye, Kiki.
Bye-bye.
We have Patty next. Hi. Let me open you up, Patty. Give me a sec. Okay, there you are. Hi, Patty.
Hey. Can you hear me?
I can.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing well. I have lots of questions. I've been trying to do a couple case studies, and I think I filled out a form yesterday. But I have a couple questions. One of the clients talks about he has a fuzziness on his teeth since he started Sweet Spot, and I don't know what I could say. Diet was pretty bad. Previously, lots of sugar, history of diabetes in the family. And so he was something that he kept saying, he says, I don't understand why my teeth are fuzzy. Would you know why? And I said, I don't know why.
What does that mean, fuzzy teeth?
I don't know. He's got like a film.
Mm-hmm.
He's got a film.
Mm-hmm. Well, he could be changing his microbiome in his mouth, and it's shifting, and there's some that gets on it. I mean, some of that shifts, and the bacteria are landing on his teeth. You say he's changing, and he's gotten rid of a lot of the sugar?
Yeah, he's really worked on changing the sugars around. He's on blood pressure medication, and he said the other day that he felt a little dizzy. And he said, would that be because, and it's only been going on 3 weeks, would that be something I have to keep watch or have him keep watching?
Absolutely. Here's the thing. Anybody that's on blood pressure medication or blood sugar medication, you have to warn them. You'll notice I say this at the beginning of almost every presentation, that what we do can very significantly change their blood pressure and their blood sugar, and that if somebody's on that medication, they need to be checking in with their doctor. Dizziness can be a sign of low blood pressure, low blood sugar, right? So if they're on metformin, or insulin, you've got to be aware of that. And so that's really important, that if he starts to notice that, that lightheadedness, the dizziness when you stand up, that he needs to get his blood pressure checked. And it could either be making an appointment with the doctor, if they're, sometimes these doctors can't see them for weeks, is to go into the local Walgreens or whatever, pay a dollar and get your blood pressure checked. Or get your own blood. Anybody that has blood pressure issues and is on blood pressure medication should be encouraged to have their own blood pressure cuff.
Yes, but he does, and that's a good thing. And so I'm assuming, because one of the things he's like, he would like to get off of it. And I said, well, if you keep doing what you're doing, I think you may, but I don't know what the process is. This is all new for me, but I just kind of shared with him, we just have to keep up with your doctor.
Keep up with your doctor. Let your if he's testing it, and he's testing it daily, and his blood pressure drops to, below 110 or 100 for sure. But if it starts to dip below 110, then he definitely should be checking in with his doctor to say, hey, my blood pressure is getting low. Can I lower my medication? When I've worked with people, they've oftentimes gotten their doctor to say, this is how frequently you can lower it.
I see. Okay. I'll keep that in mind.
Definitely.
Sure.
So as far as this fuzziness on his teeth, the film on his teeth, it could be that he is detoxing as a result of the microbiome's changing. The tongue is a big detox organ. Does he have film on his tongue, like a white film on his tongue?
I'll have to check.
Yeah, ask about that. So I would just say, brush teeth more frequently. Use a rinse. You can use a rinse of, there's a lot of good things. You can use a rinse of apple cider vinegar. Nah, that might be, you'd have to do a rinse of apple cider vinegar followed by water to make sure, because you don't want to leave the acid on the teeth. But you can put just herbs in water. So you could do, what would be good? What would be really probably good is just put some probiotics and rinse that. So I would brush them first. There's some good, some of the tooth powders that you can get, Living Libations or Primal Life Organics, I think. They have these little really good tooth powders that really help the balance the film on it. I would look into that, and then maybe like an essential oil rinse, a couple of drops of peppermint, clove, things like that, and water and rinse, and then get that, keep the mouth clean. But it sounds like he's making good changes.
Yes. And so how about with animal protein? He ate a lot of protein, and especially being a guy, and he's 6 foot. He's 6'1", about 289 pounds right now. So it seems like that stabilizes him. Is there anything I need to be concerned with? Or I've just said, have a little bit less, like more of your palm size of animal protein versus like two or three burgers.
Make sure it's organic.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Right, and so what I've often said to people is they're eating a lot of meat, and I'll say just eat the same meat budgets spend the same amount of money on meat, but buy it organic, and that's going to naturally cut down how much they eat.
Okay.
That's one little trick. But yeah, palm size is good, and organic is really important, and not processed meat, not like the, you know, sausages and salami and bacon and that kind of stuff. If he's eating it, it should be a good quality of organic, pastured, et cetera, or deep ocean fish. That's
and if it's still like two times a week, because he feels like he needs it every day.
You know, let him see how, and initially there's a lot of changes you're making here. So if he can cut it down to once a day, then he can cut it down to maybe every other day. That would be better. Don't do it too fast.
Okay.
And let's make sure that, see, as the, if a lot of people have low stomach acid. How old is he?
54.
Yeah, 54. So as people age, especially on a standard American diet lifestyle, the stomach acid just naturally goes down. And so you need more protein to get the same amount of protein absorbed. So you want to be increasing, you know, his health, his overall health. I don't know if he's been on coffee or alcohol, and all those things will affect the stomach acid, is to help do things that will improve stomach acid before you start decreasing the protein too much. So you can get him on some bitters. That would be helpful. Or just before he eats each meal, is to grab a handful of like dandelion leaves or something really powerful, like kale or arugula, something like that, and chew it, but not chew it with the intent of eating it. I mean, he's still going to eat it, but he's chewing it and chewing it and chewing it and chewing it and chewing it until it becomes like really, really liquidy in his mouth while he's preparing the rest of his meal. And that the bitterness from those herbs, those foods, will actually stimulate stomach acid production.
Interesting. Okay. And also, he's been getting a lot of Charlie horses. Is that kind of something you see when you are detoxing, when you are
starting the diet, or before starting the diet?
While on the diet.
Yeah. So it could be magnesium deficiency. It could be a potassium deficiency, because a lot of times as people are shifting to a lower carbohydrate diet, they're getting rid of some of those foods like potatoes and bananas,
yes,
that are high potassium sources. So I have them focus on some more broccoli and avocado, which are good potassium sources, or just see how he does with a supplement, and then that'll give you an idea of which works. So magnesium supplement. And then potassium supplement if the magnesium doesn't work, or maybe both.
Okay.
But that's what I think of when I think of those Charlie horses.
Yes, and I think you find this. I have some really interesting news here. Well, of course, it was through the testing. I heard Kiki was talking about that, but it was really that opened his eyes. He just wanted to see what would happen with the sweet potato, and it shot so high and it took so long to come down. He said, okay, that's it. Now I need to keep testing. So it's kind of interesting to see that. And then he also said that now when he just eats the regular vegetables, everything tastes sweet to him, which I found fascinating. So I thought I'd share that with you. But he says, did you put any sugar? I said, no, I'm not using any sugar. These are just vegetables, and, you know, you just use vegetables and the lemon juice and that sort of thing. So I found that's fascinating.
His taste buds are coming back. He's so used to having all that sugar that you don't really notice anything else. Like if you eat something, like you ate an apple after eating a big like candy bar, the apple doesn't taste sweet.
Yes, for sure. So then the other one is how would you know SIBO, when somebody has SIBO? How would you know that? Like, what are their like anytime they eat, they seem to have problems, it seems like. I'm not quite sure what to look for and what kind of test to suggest.
Yeah, so with SIBO, the breath tests are what they do in the labs. I don't like those tests particularly. They're very hard to do, and they have all kinds of things they have to be careful about, and they're not 100% accurate. But symptom-wise, what I should have gotten as a bonus, I'm pretty sure, on the bonuses page, there should be something called the gut assessment kit. And there's a SIBO. But if you don't have that, you can just go to Google and do SIBO assessment. Dr. Siebecker's site is a good one, S-I-E-B-E-C-K-E-R. Okay. And she has an assessment. You just have them take it, like the questions. And if there's a certain number of positive answers, you're suspicious that there is a SIBO going on. Now, with SIBO, small intestinal bacterial overgrowth, a lot of folks, a lot of conventional folks, first of all, will go, oh, we just have to kill off the bugs, right, and put people on rifaximin or some other kind of drug. But that's not the way it works, right? Yeah, there's bugs there, but a lot of times they're just your normal flora that didn't quite make it all the way to the large intestine, and they got stuck in the small intestine, and then they produced this methane gas. So there's a number of ways to approach that, and it's a multi-pronged approach, and we go through that in our digestive mastery program, where there's the multi-pronged approach where you have to address what's called the migrating motor complex, and you have to address the bugs, and you have to take the person off any of the probiotics that contain lactate fermenting. So it's basically most of them, and you have to get a lactate-free, a delactate-free probiotic, or bifido, or do the others, but in a rectal form, like an enema or a suppository. And then, you know, there's a stress component usually. So all of those things are important. And then moving things along with the migrating motor complex, you have to be stimulating the vagus nerve so that the vagus nerve keeps things moving and it moves them along. Spacing the meals like we do in this insulin resistance program is important, very important for SIBO as well. So a lot of people will actually see changes without addressing the SIBO directly just by shifting their meals to 4 or 5 hours apart.
4 or 5 hours apart. Okay. Yeah, that's like you said, the vagus nerve. That seems to be a lot of complaints that I'm getting for one particular person I'm working with. And so it's hard. There's like multi-system approach on that one. So it's a little more complicated. Yeah, absolutely.
The good news is that a lot of the things that we teach you to do are going to affect multi-systems, and then you have to just kind of fine-tune it down. But the vagus nerve, we talked about that in Shine. I don't know if you got a Shine bonus or not, but one of the years we did, or it was an old Shine. It was back in 2014, I think, when we did the gut-brain axis. But we had all the slides on that. But you can also just go online and look up vagus nerve, you know, how to activate the vagus nerve. There's a really good book I've been referring everybody to. It is called The Healing Power of the Access the Healing Power of the Vagus Nerve. And he talks a lot about that, but he talks about some specific touch points. Like, he's a craniosacral therapist and he learned these techniques that actually help to stimulate the vagus nerve and shift things really quickly. So I highly recommend that book to everybody who's dealing with anybody under stress, which is 100% of us.
Yes, that's wonderful. Well, I don't want to take any more time for somebody else, but thank you so much, Dr. Reed Maria. I'm looking forward to meeting you in person at Shine in September. So.
Thank you, Patty. Bye.
Bye-bye.
We have another Patty in Virginia, too. Patty Lepko. Okay. All right, so let me go back to my Q&As. Open your line, even if you just want to introduce yourself and say hi. If we haven't spoken, introduce yourself, please. I like to meet everybody in the program, you know, and now I know Patty. And I've known Kiki because she's active and she speaks up on most of the calls. Okay, oh, good. So it looks like some of you submitted cases, so I'm going to open those up, and then I'm going to look back through some of these questions. Okay. All right, looks like Patty. Talked about the two people with the blood pressure. It looks like since we talked, is there anything? Oh, boy. I need the... Not the link to the spreadsheet, because those aren't very helpful when there's a case. What really helps me better, I see Ann Merkel and Isabella Yang. What really helps me is if I have the original if you can put that in there, Lynn, the original form, like the form itself will show me the responses in a way that I can read it much better. Thank you. Let me go back here and I'll answer those questions while you do that. Okay, so that one and then that one. How do you raise your leptin levels? A lot of the stuff that we do and teach in this program are things that will raise leptin levels. So low glycemic diet, keeping the sugar levels, keeping the insulin levels under control because insulin disrupts leptin. Meal spacing, not eating carbohydrates before, you know, the late afternoon, evening. It can be helpful, all those things will. Can you review leptin resistance versus insulin resistance? Sure. So insulin resistance is the resistance of your cells to the signal that insulin is setting. Leptin resistance, leptin is produced by the fat cells to say, hey, we're full, we don't need any more. It turns off appetite. What becomes resistant to leptin are the cells in the pancreas and also in the hypothalamus. So when leptin will be produced, say you've got an abundance of fat cells and they're all releasing lots of leptin all the time, the hypothalamus, which is the main control center for appetite, will actually get resistant to that, and that's leptin resistance. And it develops over time. It doesn't develop overnight. It develops from chronically elevated leptin levels, as in the case of obesity. People eating, but even when they get the signal, here's the thing, right? We get the signal, we're full, we keep eating. That's going to create leptin resistance because it's going to create that, okay, we're not listening here approach. Yeah, so that's basically that. Angelica, what is the process for getting a prescription for a Freestyle Libre? Does your doctor need to order the disc? Yeah, you have to get a prescription. That's the only way you can do it. You have to go to an MD, or in some cases, I was able to order them, and then the local pharmacy decided to tell me that I wasn't allowed to anymore, so we can't get them locally, but we're still able to get them online. There's an online vendor called Edwards Health, and they sell them, and you fill out, you buy it, and then you put in your doctor's name, and they'll actually contact the doctor's office to get the prescription. Yeah, the doctor doesn't need to order it. They just give you a prescription and then you fill it at whatever pharmacy or online vendor you want. Patty, also the client having Charlie horses. Okay, we talked about that. Chris, I heard an expert on a diabetes summit a long time ago say that specifically during acute stress, blood goes to legs, arms, and brain, while the liver sends glucose. Yeah, it doesn't send glucose to the muscle. It just releases glucose, and it goes because of the blood. Like during acute stress, it's true that the circulation gets shunted towards the legs and arms, and the fact that the liver is breaking down glycogen, but also some of the muscles are breaking down, and the protein that's in the blood is breaking down into sugar, and that gets into the bloodstream, and because the bloodstream is shunted, so it was an oversimplification. The liver does gluconeogenesis during acute stress, and that's the main reason people can become diabetic due to acute stress. Yeah, the cortisol will raise glucose levels just as if you ate a candy bar. Yeah, and it's not acute stress so much as chronic stress. So it does happen during acute stress, but that's not the problem. We're designed for acute stress. The problem is when it keeps going on, that chronic stress. That's what really gets us into trouble. Okay, so Chris, I'm about to start with a client who has severe diarrhea and blood sugar issues, very likely due to stress. Do you recommend several meals during the day with a tailored diet, low FODMAP, or three times a day only with ample protein and good fats? I always recommend only three times a day. If a person has blood sugar issues, if the person is overweight, and if the person has gut issues, I highly recommend spacing those meals 4 to 6 hours apart. Not just for the blood sugar regulation, not just to keep the insulin levels good, but because it affects the migrating motor complex in the gut. And the migrating motor complex, will control the movement of the contents of the stomach once it leaves the stomach down through the tract and keep it going till it gets to the ileocecal valve and dumps into the large intestine. If that migrating motor complex isn't working, then the food, the probiotics, everything kind of gets stuck and the organisms don't make their way down to the large intestine where they belong. I would say that, what was I going to say about the protein? This is what I was going to say. What the studies have shown that the migrating motor complex activates about 3.5 hours after a meal. So if somebody's eating at 3 hours or 2.5 hours or even 3.5 hours, it's not really going to get activated and things are not going to move along. So I think it's important to make sure of that. And then overnight, of course, it gets activated because of the long fasting, but it's really not going to get activated until, at least 3 hours, three and a half hours past a meal. So again, in terms of supporting the adrenals, 3 times a day is great. If they've got adrenal burnout, always start people with breakfast. You know, people may evolve to doing intermittent fasting, but if you look in Sweet Spot, and the way I've always written it is get the first morning, having protein first thing in the morning. So balanced breakfast, like we teach in the, what's it called? Hormone hacking breakfast menus, right? Ample protein, good fats, no oil, just real good fats. And then if they do have a lot of stress, I would say, with the diarrhea, you want to find out why. Is it an ileocecal valve that's in the open position? Is it dysbiosis for, bad organisms? So it's really a matter of looking at that. Yeah, but I would definitely go less. Less is better, especially with diarrhea, because they're only going to poop it out if you aggravate them. Chris, what type of magnesium will not impact bowel movement? In the nutrition mentioned magnesium, I don't know if I missed the type. Yeah, so magnesium citrate will tend to influence the bowels. Magnesium glycinate doesn't tend to. Magnesium taurate doesn't tend to. So I would look at that. The ionic magnesiums don't, and definitely topical magnesium. So, and if somebody does have the Charlie horses, I would get topical magnesium in addition to oral, because you can rub it right over those cramps and they can have a bottle of that sitting by their bed. If they wake up in the middle of the night, they can put some on and just massage it in and get that good thing. And also Epsom salts baths can be very helpful. Chris, thinking about good food absorption, she's already on digestive enzymes, so we have apple cider vinegar, zinc, what would be the right timing? Okay, not knowing enough about this person, if they have low stomach acid, I think they need to be getting it up. Apple cider vinegar can be helpful there, so can bitters. Bitters formula, or chewing on the bitter greens and creating this pool of bitter juice in the mouth before eating, about 15 minutes before eating, and zinc for sure. Zinc is so important for the digestive tract. I just totally think that zinc is, and it's so low in so many people. I like to recommend a liquid ionic zinc. So liquid ionic zinc, the bitters, if you want apple cider vinegar too, try it and see how she feels about 15 minutes before meals, before eating. And again, looking at the digestive enzymes, you want to look at the quality and the quantity and the ratio. The original form should be in on the site when, right, if you go to where they filled it out from, which is on the site, that's the link. And then I can access the back end of that. Yeah, let's see. All right, let's see. I'm going to go back to see who's here. It looks like Cookeville, Tennessee. Who do we have in Cookeville, Tennessee?
Hi, this is Barbara Dunn.
Hi, Barbara.
I finally figured out how to get on the live call. I was on my iPad, and I apologize. I have laryngitis, so my throat's a little scratchy.
No worries. I'm glad you're on. I hope you're on the mend. I hope you're doing some slippery elm and other things to support you.
Yes, ma'am. I sure am. And I'm learning so much. I'm still in overwhelm because I'm actually part of 2 programs simultaneously. I joined this one and then also the last of July, I joined ERC, and I'm in the process of getting my Get to Know You form submitted.
Great.
So in fact, I was working on that, figuring out the system and that sort of thing.
Well, I'm excited that you're doing that, and I get to really get to know you over this next year.
Yeah, I'm really, really excited. I have participated in lots of programs, not so much physicians or healthcare providers, because we're very limited in our location here in Middle Tennessee. So I've done a lot of things online, and what I found with your program, I'm my first patient, and lots of things are coming together that I've learned. So I'm really, really excited. Yeah.
I'm excited. Yay. So how can I support you today?
Just wanted to introduce myself to the group. I'm taking lots of notes, looking at the names that are on the live chat, and I'll be on the call tomorrow as well. And as I get my form submitted, I'll have a coach, and I really need testing. So, you know, once that's done, you know, I'm already doing so many things. Just a short, brief history. Since 2014, on my own, I have gotten off of metformin and Glipizide. I'm 59. My A1C has stayed the same. So my doctor has just said, keep doing what you're doing. And basically, he just orders my labs and writes prescriptions. And so I want to learn how to get that, all of my blood sugars within that 110 and not going higher. And also lowering that A1C as, you know, the first step.
How high is your A1C?
It has stayed between 6.7 and about 7 as I lowered. You know, and, of course, I've recently realized that that wasn't a good A1C, but the doctors tell you for being classified as a diabetic, oh, that's great. You know, so I thought I was doing so well. Now I know.
You just have to get to the heart of why, and there's probably some spikes that you're finding that are shooting it up. Because 6.7 is probably, like, you know, high, like, I'm guessing, like, 150, 160 on average. That's pretty high. I'm shocked that they let people get away with that.
Well, that it's the average, actually, because being on the glipizide, I would often wake up in the middle of the night with below 60 blood sugar and then would overeat, and found out that by testing just 2 hours after I ate, that was the only thing I was ever told to do years ago, I might have a blood sugar in the afternoon of 250. So by the time you average to 250 with the 60 over, it looks like, oh, you're within, you know, good diabetic parameters.
Yeah.
And so I'm no grain right now. I'm very little dairy. I've totally changed the kinds of vegetables, you know, I'm eating. Basically, I'm not eating anything white. I can't even handle, like, beans and that sort of thing at this point until I learn how to eat them properly and get my blood sugar under control.
Okay. Well, you'll do it. You're in the right place to do
that. Yes. I'm excited because I've made improvements so far and know what to do next. That was the big question. Yep.
Well, once you get that Getting to Know You form filled out, it'll open up on the page. It'll tag, and then it'll open up on the page a link to my calendar. I started to hide that until the form was filled out because people would just jump to getting on my calendar, and then I would not have a form. So I'm like, how am I going to help you? I don't have a form. So we're making you have to fill it out first. So as soon as you fill it out, go back to the page and refresh it, and you'll see set up your time. And the times are the week of the 19th. So I have, like, two times on the 19th and a time on the 21st. And then, you know, hopefully you can make one of those. And if not, we'll add some more in early September. But I want to get to know you guys early. So do it.
Awesome. Yep, I will.
Awesome.
I should
great to meet you
tonight. All right, thank you so much. I look forward to it.
Yeah, I do too. Thank you, Barbara. All right, I'm going to try to find that form, unless I'm going to go back to the Q&A and see if Lynn found it. There we go. Isn't there a short one? I usually create short forms for those, like the, you know, in the GO, whatever. Okay, INA case study submission. Now if I go to edit it, and then I go to responses, And then I go to individual, and I go to the end. I'm going to see that there are, okay, the last one was 8-3, Ann Merkel. The one before that was Patty. The one before that was Patty. And Isabel. Okay, is Isabel on the call? Is Ann still on the call? All right, great. Thank you. Yeah, so here's the thing. If you fill out one of those forms and then you get on one of these calls, they saw Ann earlier, raise your hand, okay, or type it into the chat, hey, I submitted a form, because I like to wait for people to get here, and sometimes people show up later, and I don't want to have done their case without them. The way I like to do cases is you submit them, and then you're there to work with me. So you get on the phone, and I'll be going through what you've got there and asking you questions, and we can go back and forth, and then we can come up with what's the next best plan of action. Okay? So I don't know if she's still on. Patty, if you still want me to go through, I think we went through a lot of it, but if there's still anything outstanding that you want me to go through on there, just do a star two to raise your hand. In the meantime, I'll go back to the Q&A. Thank you, Lynn. All right, so I don't see anything else there. I'm assuming there's nothing else in here. Yeah, magnesium glycinate. Ann, thank you for being helpful. Opening mic to say hi. Great. Let me go back there to Ann. Where is Ann? Okay. Hi, Ann. Ann Fuller, Tampa. No? Okay, you might just need to unmute yourself on your phone or something. Or maybe you don't have a mic. Okay. Okay, so let's see. Yeah, Ann, she is. Okay, I got it. Ann, can you get back on the phone so we could go? So we could talk? In the meantime, I've got your case and I'll open it up. And then we'll go back to Patty. So is this Ann? No. And I'm going to ask you to, if you can, please submit these in advance as opposed to the day of the call, just because it's much, you know, I don't generally have free time throughout the day to be looking to pick these up to look at them in advance. I do like to look in advance if I can. Okay, so Ann has a female, age 68, height 5'6", 150 pounds, so needs to lose some weight, retired nurse, married or in a committed relationship, no kids. Top health priorities are anxiety and depression on awakening, worsening memory, diabetes, and diagnosed with insulin receptor resistance, depression, frustration with husband since house fire 3 years ago. House fire and frustration, plus all those health challenges, definitely issues that would raise the stress levels, no? And if you come on, Ann, back on the phone, just go ahead and we have two Anns. Yeah, and if you're back on the, come back on the phone and just press *7 and that'll open your lineup. So meanwhile, I'll go through what I see here, but I'll probably have some questions for you. So she has somebody with depression, anxiety, awakening, worsening memory, diabetes, insulin resistance, has had, brain surgeries, two brain surgeries. Was it cancer? Was it a tumor? Was it a hematoma, what's the thing called? Driving me crazy. Aneurysm, what was it for? Tonsillectomy, thyroidectomy, hysterectomy, 59 years old, polycythemia vera. This person is quite in bad case, in bad shape. A 59 ruptured disc, C5 and C6, so that's in the neck. 60, myasthenia gravis, lots of traumatic incest, miscarriage, abortion, layoff, car accident. Oh, my gosh. And this person is, like, bombarded with external stresses, has had 5 surgeries. I don't know if she had another surgery for the ruptured disc. If that's the case, it's 6. She's got 2 very, very serious diseases, myasthenia gravis and polycythemia, and she's saying blood, I don't know if she's ever been diagnosed with diabetes, but saying insulin resistance. Long psychiatric care, lots of meds, Synthroids for 20 years, meridian-based energy medicine sessions with me since 2008, since Shine 2018 analyzed her genetics, suggested diet and lifestyle changes. She dropped gluten, organic whole foods diet, stopped smoking marijuana, adjusted her nutritional supplementation, resulting in good weight loss, more energy, feeling good about herself and her marriage, yay, has maintained diet except for parties and weekend gatherings when she stuffs herself with cakes and started smoking again. Oh, no. She can't get rid of these problems without getting rid of this, and she's got a lot of help, emotional stuff, and I'm glad that you're doing emotional type work with her, but there's definitely an issue here with emotional eating, right? So she works with Anne for energy medicine, acupuncture, coaching, and nutrition, and working with a naturopath, psychiatrist, GP, and MD. Staying off gluten most of the time. Yeah. So here's the thing with gluten. You got to get your people to realize the importance of staying off of it 100%, especially when she has some genetic snips towards it, because it takes about 6 months for a lot of the antibody levels to go down. And with the polycythemia and the myasthenia and all the inflammation from all the surgeries, having glands and removed, she doesn't have her female organs, she doesn't have her thyroid, I don't know what happened in her brain, but this is stuff that it's really a challenge because they're a mess emotionally and stress-wise. And it sounds like you're doing some great work with her. But really keeping her off of this stuff, like give her some alternatives, even like if she's going to a party, bring some gluten-free cookies or something, even things we don't really necessarily think are healthy. But I think that those things are definitely a problem. Cheating with gluten and desserts, right? Resisting taking good nutritional supplements because they're expensive. She used to buy them at local grocery. She doesn't exercise and just resists doing it. So you've got your work cut out with you to work with her on why is she having these resistance? Why are these patterns keep coming up? And how can you work with her on the emotional piece of it? It sounds like you're working energetically, but she may also, and psychiatrist, but she definitely can't get well unless she's actually going to do this. And especially if she's eating cakes and she has insulin resistance and she's eating gluten. Yikes, her husband triggers old abuse issues, even though he's a great guy, can't resist cheating on her diet. She's on Synthroid, just went off 3 mind drugs, but still taking something. She's got a ton of nutritional supplements. It looks like, you know, all her bases are covered with minerals and fatty acids and K and CoQ10 and glutathione and... But is she actually taking all these, or is she just, like, has them and she periodically takes them? That's a question I would have. Cheats but maintains overall weight over the summer, off gluten. Yeah. All right. Has she been testing her glucose? I mean, you've got to get her testing her glucose. Because sometimes, like, the person that we talked to, I think it was Patty's person, who said, oh, my God, my sugars went up that high. I'm not doing this anymore. Good, she got rid of the chemical agents in the home, toxic smokehouse fire 3 years ago. Yeah. All right, so here's what I would recommend you do. I mean, since this is insulin resistance call versus a general call, I want to stick to focusing on those kind of labs. But if you come to the office hours calls, which you have access to as an NEPT core member, you should be able to, you know, upload the labs that you get from her, and we can actually talk on the phone. And those calls will be like in a Zoom format where we could share screen and go through them. But it sounds like she's got a lot of good habits and that she doesn't do soft drinks, but she also never drinks greens. She drinks alcohol once a week or so. She gets fast food once a week. She consumes tap water once a week. It's not going to kill her. Eats out more times a week, twice a week. She's got a lot of bad habits here, and I think, you know, you're going to have to identify with her where she's willing to go and how to get her off of things one at a time. Like, okay, how can you get her, I would say, off the gluten to start, right? And then how do you do that, and how can you provide her with something else she can bring with her to this parties? But it really sounds like it's an emotional eating problem. See, and there she is. Anne, hi.
Hi, can you hear me?
I can. It sounds like
oh, good. Okay.
Yes.
I've been trying to type in answers to your questions as we've been going along.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm going to look to see.
But that's okay. Yes, I'm a gluten practitioner just like you are. And so I got her off of gluten early because so many of the depression, the anxiety, yada, yada, yada. I'm not sure she really had incest or rape early on, but I think her psychiatrist has convinced her that she has. But she's just in this cycle of she's just switched doctors several times, but she keeps coming back to me. And I know her personally, too, so, you know, we're in the same round of friends. So, you know, she's getting a lot of information from me and a lot of support. And like you said, you don't want to take a lot of time on this case. But I was just wondering if myasthenia gravis and the other condition could relate to the blood sugar issue. She hasn't been diabetic very long, I don't think, but everything's kind of gone haywire in the last year or two.
Yeah, so she has been, do you know what her fasting glucoses are? Do you have any of those numbers?
No, I've got a session with her tomorrow. She's going to bring them, I hope. She's getting really forgetful. You know, that's why I put her on some special magnesium just for the brain, and I'm trying to get her to get more energy and help her. And I don't know the exact cause of her brain surgeries when she was really young, but I bet if she had the same condition now, they wouldn't have done it.
Wow. So you don't know whether it was. Those are all kinds of good questions. So myasthenia gravis affects acetylcholine receptors, usually at the neuromuscular junction, but acetylcholine also affects memory. So that's impacted in myasthenia gravis.
And is it true that you shouldn't be doing a lot of magnesium when you've got myasthenia gravis?
That, you know, because it's not a common condition, right? So I'd have to look into that because it's not something that's at the tip of my tongue. I know I'm just looking. I found a JAMA article relating them to, but it seems like it's saying. It's not, it had the full text. Let me just see there. Sometimes I'm just going to give you a link if I find a full text article that maybe you can dig through because we don't have time on this call to, like for me to read an whole article. But
great.
Right. If I go to download PDF, you got to purchase it. Oh damn, they get you every time. And for only $75, you can have a copy of this article. Let's see. Is my theory about postulated the immediate causes? Yes, we know that. Glucose and lipid disorders in myasthenia gravis. Here's another one. And mechanisms. It's investigate the difference methods. Proportion of impaired fasting glucose in type 2 diabetics is a serum.
And I know stress brings on the symptoms. So.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, for sure. Well, stress inhibits acetylcholine production. So she's already has an inability to pick up the acetylcholine of the neuromuscular junction, so it's going to affect that. High proportion of glucose and metabolic disorders in myasthenia gravis. So they don't know that there's a causative effect, but there is definitely been postulated to be a connection. You know, what do they call it? Correlation does not mean causation, but and myasthenia gravis is definitely autoimmune, right? And so diabetes, you know, and insulin resistance, et cetera, will increase inflammation, which will, you know, cause an increase in autoimmune flare-ups. Looking to see if there's anything else here. Yeah, there's a bunch of studies that show. If you just do a search on myasthenia gravis and blood sugar, there's a bunch of studies that show up, and you can, you know, go through them to see. But I would say yes, and definitely because of the autoimmune. Polycythemia, I think, also has a autoimmune. I'm sorry. I would think that, you know, vagus nerve approaches would be helpful with the
myopathy. Okay.
So there's that book I keep talking about, Access to Healing Power of the Vagus Nerve. You'd think I have stock in that company, or that and the Power of Sleep, or Why You Sleep. I'm just, like, so enamored with those books since I've read them. You know, I don't benefit by referring people except for getting people to read things that are going to be helpful. But I really think that that's a book that we all should have on our shelves, The Access to Healing Power of the Vagus Nerve.
What is it called again?
Access to Healing Power of the Vagus Nerve.
Okay, great.
Yeah, they're actually feeling like the polycythemia vera is a kind of a cancer, kind of a lymphoma, leukemia, lymphoma. Myeloproliferative neoplasms, bone marrow produced. So I would definitely think that that's going to be related. I mean, these are serious, serious conditions, right? And if she's serious about being healthy and not dying a miserable death, then she's got to get serious about her diet. Sounds like you've got her on good stuff. She's got to get consistent with it. Because with autoimmune, you know this, right? You've done the gluten practitioner thing. You know that it's like 6 months. Once you get those antibodies stimulated, it could be 6 months. And meanwhile,
well, I've told her that over and over again. But, yeah, she just – and then she goes back to smoking marijuana, and that really is –
of the problems.
Do what?
But that's probably the least of her problems. It's eating the gluten and the sugar and the cookies and the whatever else, she's cakes that she's eating when she goes off, or drinking alcohol or whatever, which she says she does twice a week. That's way worse than marijuana.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's definitely autoimmune, and we definitely see a correlation with blood sugar and autoimmune conditions. So I don't know what's going to get through to her. I mean, that's the thing, right? You've known her for a long time. What does it take to go get through to her? Says, okay, her weight is okay. That doesn't mean you're healthy. Look at these diseases. She's what, 60 what?
Eight.
68, yeah. I mean, she should have another good, you know, lot of years on her life. She doesn't have to work.
Right.
I mean, it's not like, yeah, let me just do it. I'm 98 and I don't care, you know? People don't get that. They don't want to live those last years of their lives out being horrifically disabled.
Right. Well, I referred her to another naturopath, so she's got two of us working on her case right now. So we're coming at it from different angles. So somebody should get through to her.
But the trauma piece, you know, she's had traumas in her past. There is some specific trauma work. Kimberly, who's in our program, and then Laura Fine, they do this trauma work that helps people to get through this stuff.
Well, that's what I do, too, with the energy medicine.
Oh, you do? Okay. So, yeah.
Yeah,
so,
I mean, that's what I've been doing for 30 years.
Oh, my gosh. So she's just, like, she's fighting it, right?
Well, she gets really good, and she's got tools she's using on herself now that really help, but then she backslides.
Yeah, that's the piece. It's like sitting with her and really getting curious about the choices she's making. So when you're in that situation and you're at a party or your husband gets you mad, you've got a choice. Which life do you want to go towards? Do you want to go towards the life where you are comfortable and healthy, and or you want to go towards the life where you're in a wheelchair, basically? Because that's the prognosis with the myasthenia and low energy because of, you know, the polycythemia and the risk of proliferate, you know, of clotting, and so many things that can go wrong with these things. And then the diabetes
right.
On top of it. Holy cow. So
I'm afraid she's going to lose her brain, her mind before she even.
Well, she might. Right? She might.
Yeah, she's getting really forgetful.
She might. And so this is affecting it. So you know, I would just start with the basics of just, okay, we're just going to do a 30-day metabolic reset. Can you do this for 30 days? Can you get her committed to do a 30-day metabolic reset?
I might be able to. I'm walking her through the sweet spot.
Yeah. Okay, so month two of the sweet spot is the metabolic reset. So get her on board with that. 30 days, okay? Just do it for me for 30 days and see what difference we see. And if you have labs before and after, that would be helpful.
Yes, and I'm going to get those.
Great.
Great. Well,
all
thank
right.
you. I appreciate that. You're helping me look at it from kind of a different angle of seriousness.
Good. Yeah, curiosity. Like, shoot, because you're doing the right things in terms of the energy work. You're telling her the right things, but she's not getting through to her the seriousness of her situation, and
mm-hmm.
she's not connected to what she really wants as an outcome. And she's not
yeah.
connecting her behaviors to the outcome, and that's where a lot of that processing has to happen.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Good. Well, thank you.
You're so welcome, Ann. Are you coming to Shine this year?
I can't. I'm going to be in Europe.
Well, bummer.
I know. Gee, I can't bilocate yet. I wish I could. I'd love to come.
Yeah. All right. Well, we'll see you another time. We'll see you on these calls, though.
Definitely. Thank you.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.
All right. So, Patty. Hi. Did I get all your questions answered? I'm going to pull up your response sheet and make sure.
Oh,
you there?
I am here now.
What happened?
Thank you. I'm so sorry. Yes, you very much answered everything. I just had that second case with the 18 rules, and I wanted to see what your feedback was. I don't think I was as specific as Barbara was, as I should have been. I guess there's so much to write, and I don't know if with you looking at it, if you saw anything that would.
This is the person, female, 18. Okay. Yeah, so this whole process of filling these out is a really good exercise for you guys because there's so much to ask, right? We have I don't know how long, 12-hour module in NEPT on doing the right, asking the right questions. And the more you do it, the more you realize, oh, yeah, I forgot to ask that. Oh, yeah, I forgot to ask that. Because there's just so much you can get on a form, and that's why these forms are pretty thorough. So she's 18, 190 pounds, 5'5" at 18. 100, oh, my God. Yeah, so get real, right? When someone gains weight, when they're a kid and they lose weight, they gain weight, they lose weight, they're gaining and losing fat cells. And so wherever they land at maturity, which for women is usually 18, 19, they're going to struggle for the rest of their lives if they don't get the weight down. She may even be on that. Where there's that many fat cells, right, we're not going to lose the numbers anymore. We're only going to lose the filling, right? So she has, let's just say she has 10,000 fat cells. And she weighs 190 pounds. In order for her to weigh, she's 5'5", 125 pounds, which is what she should weigh, that she's going to have to drop that 70, 65 pounds. But it's 65 pounds out of the existing fat cells. When the fat cells get shrunk, they start to beg for food. Even when, you know, the weight is still, you know, going down there, those fat cells shrunk, makes it so hard for people to lose weight. So I encourage you to really work with your parents, people that are parents, work with the kids, and explain to them, you've got to get to your ideal weight by the time you're 18, 19. And it could be anywhere from 18 to 21. It depends on the person and when they reach skeletal maturity. When their growth plates close, that's when that tends to happen. That all, like, you're an adult now. So she needs to, like, focus on this. So let's see what her issue is. Fortunately, she has zero children. Some people at 18 do, and that's a big problem. Digestive issues, musculoskeletal, post-concussion, whiplash, and hormone issues. Okay, so let's talk about more severe reaction to MMR. Ah, anything egg-based as a baby, two-year-old stitches on forehead from pulling out a corner table, vagus nerve pass out, high fevers. Wow. 6 years old. When did the concussion happen?
16.
16. But she passed out at 6.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
From high fever.
Yeah, that was something totally different. And then the post-concussion at 16, just getting into a car, bumped the head. Just a pure accident.
Okay. And then after that, she started having reflux. Very common to have digestive issues after a concussion, headaches, post-trauma. Okay. So I'm going to just stop here because these calls are the calls for RSPT, and I want to make sure that we're not taking on like these very complicated general cases. I want to know the background, but this person definitely has some blood sugar dysregulation going on. Is that what you're seeing?
Yes.
Okay. So I'm not going to work on the concussion syndrome, but I want to talk about some of these other things. Consistent solitude, cell phone, sitting out at work due to job requirements, and also being a student. She's got a great attitude, that's good, willingness to learn and take action. So is she willing, have you asked her, willing to change her diet? Significant.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. So let's see what medications, none, good, nutritional, she takes a few supplements, dietary. Used to eat all the above, including lots of fruit, started so you've got her on a metabolic reset.
Yes, I've started that.
Fantastic. All right, I like to look at how they're eating, and so she's exercising 3 times a week, she's outdoors 3 times a week, she's getting in the sun, she's relaxing 4 to 8 times a week, she's drinking greens once a week, maybe we can get her up there and drinking more, a little bit more on the green side, eating vegetables every day, she doesn't drink alcohol, consume caffeine, she's got some really good habits here. Sugar was did in the past, so she was eating a lot of it in the past, right?
Yes.
Eating out, fast food, great. So you got her to shift a lot already. All right, so what's your specific question?
I guess, am I going in the right direction with this young lady?
Absolutely, because you're cleaning up her diet. You've got her eating more greens. You've got her, let me go back here. You've got her you said all these did in the past. I'm assuming this is a recent past because she's only 18 years old, right?
That's
so
correct.
You've got her on purified water. You've got her off fast food. You've got her not eating out anymore. You've got her off sugar. She's drinking purified water. She's sleeping 8 hours a night. You are totally on the right track with this, right?
Okay.
So I would just take her through Sweet Spot and, you know, just really get her to test blood sugar if she's willing. And if she's not, then you just take her through the metabolic reset, you know, the more strict version of the metabolic reset diet, if she's willing and able to do it. She needs to lose 65 pounds, 65 pounds.
Okay.
Right? And so
yes.
That's not going to happen overnight.
No.
If you want to get any lab work on her, then the standard stuff that we talk about, you know, certainly fasting glucose if she doesn't have a meter to test herself. Insulin and A1C would be good ones to start with because those are going to give us an idea of where she's starting so you can see how she's progressing. And if she has any, you know, other labs, you can certainly look at them, but like looking for inflammation markers and things like that. You got her on the right track. And, you know, she's 18, so she doesn't have like Anne's case where there's like, you know, decades and decades and decades of bad habits and traumas and all the stuff. Yeah, she's got some, but you get her on a good diet and then identify if she needs the supplements and just go slowly with her. You know, if she's willing to do stuff, then good, move on. And if she's stuck with something, work with her. But I think you can get some good results with her.
Yes, I put her on, we found a digestive enzyme. I think I put that on there. And I didn't know what else, if you might suggest some other type of supplements for the process to continue, or do you think a little bit at a time?
I would do a little at a time. You don't want to overwhelm her either. So get her, you know, get the diet going. You can get her on like the chromium and magnesium. Make sure she's got good fatty acids, whether it be through the food, through the chia and flax and hemp and all that. But I'll also probably put her on the DHA or an EPA DHA supplement.
Could you say that part again? It was DHEA, like D like in dog.
not EA, but DHA. So if you look at the beginning part in Sweet Spot and in the practitioner training, we talk about the top three craving crusher supplements people need. Yeah.
Okay.
And, you know, if she's just shifting to a good diet, you know, something like folic acid mineral supplement could be helpful to get those minerals in. Vitamin D, depending on what her levels are, but vitamin D for sure she most likely needs. Although she's out in the sun now, I don't know if she was, if she's a student and indoors most of the time.
Right, you know? Right. And winter's coming, getting ready to come here in Virginia, it'll start, you know. That's when I feel like we need to keep the vitamin D going.
Yeah, absolutely.
Would you also suggest zinc for her stomach issues?
I think that zinc is a good one. You've got her on digestive enzymes. She's young, so the likelihood of low stomach acid is lower, but if she has reflux based on the accident, it may have affected that, and it may have affected the lower esophageal sphincter, and it's loose, and it's allowing reflux up. So, look at the vagus nerve. You know, some of the things like the gagging, and just look up vagus nerve exercises, because she had the trauma and the stress, and that's affected her. Probiotic-containing foods. Right, just basic gut hygiene type things.
Okay.
Okay.
Okay. Thank you very much.
What kind of issues does she have? Is it gas, bloating, constipation, diarrhea?
I'm sorry. Repeat that again.
The types of digestive. You said gut health.
More like what you're saying. I think it's very much the lower sphincter of the gut, the stomach area, where she said even when she's drinking the water, it comes back up.
So I would look into, and this could happen from that as well, look into a hiatal hernia. Go on YouTube of all places. There's some good doctors on there that have done a hiatal hernia release. It shows you how to pull it down. Unless she has a chiropractor that she could see that could do it. But if you look it up, you can probably teach her how to do it on herself or teach her mom to do it.
Okay. Hiatal hernia release. Okay. I got that.
Yeah. Yeah, because the stomach will then, you know, pop up through the sphincter, and it's just constantly dumping, you know, because as opposed to it just, you know, the stomach in where it's at, where it's supposed to be. So it goes up through the diaphragm a little bit, and that causes a problem.
Okay. That's what she talks about. Yeah, she just feels like it sits there. It doesn't go anywhere.
Yeah.
Okay. I will look at this up. Thank you very much.
You're very welcome. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
All right. I think we're at the end of our time, guys. I'll check to see if any last questions slipped in here. Thank you, Lynn, for posting that. Yes, I got it. Okay, good. So chat-wise, Lynn put up a book. Looks good. Let's see. Pumpkin seeds for good, for zinc. Yep. Cashews are actually a good source of zinc, too. Lynn posted a link to the hiatal hernia release. Thank you. I'm looking to just see if anything else in here. We got all the first ones. Yeah. All right. I don't see any new ones. What was that link to? Yeah, Lynn put the link to the access and the healing power of the vagus nerve. I just think anybody that deals with anybody that's under stress, which is most of us, right, should be looking at that. There's just so much great information there. Okay, so Lynn put a lot of good stuff in here. Okay. All right, guys. I'm going to open up, and I'm going to open up your line so you can all just say goodbye to each other and to me, and I appreciate you guys for coming and for doing the work you're doing more than anything. I just think this work is so, so important, and every day more and more people give me horrendous stories of the care they're not getting that they should be getting, and we're out there to do that. We're out there to help these people. Think about just the three or four people we talked to today that your people are getting great care. They may not be, you know, we may not be able to quote unquote cure them, but they have to be willing to cure themselves. But you guys are doing great work. Congratulations, Patty and Kiki, and who else mentioned earlier? There was a case earlier. And Anne, of course, Anne's been doing this for a long time. And you know, I'm taking on people and taking them through, and this is new to you. You're doing absolutely wonderful work, so I appreciate it. So I'm going to open the lines. 1, 2, 3. Bye, everybody.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night. Thank you.
Good night, everyone.